If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel.
I started off delivering pizza, but in those pizzas, there was betting slips. I was like 12 years old. I wasn't afraid of anything. I wasn't afraid of dying. But man, people from Genovese family, which they embraced me. And I was making money that my dad wasn't even making. I got him to the point where we were doing higher level debt collection. And I realized the fear I put in people.
Is it more important to be respected and loved or feared?
I say feared because I didn't know what love was. I've been shot. And to this day, I don't know if it was meant for me. I'm putting my life on the line for them and I'm not getting that in return. So I had to make a decision. But you just can't walk out of that fight. They don't leave loose ends. That was when Rudy Giuliani took over. He was just taking everybody down. I was left with no one, right, which was my opportunity out. Anyone involved in the lifestyle that I live nowadays, and I'm going to be blunt with them, you're not going to survive.
What advice would you give to someone to make that transition of really becoming themselves and finding a purpose?
Pick a forte. Everybody has a forte. And run with it.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I hope you're having a happy holiday. I just want to thank you for being a loyal listener. And if you're new here, thank you so much for joining us. Please take a second to give us a review. Go on to Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Give us 5 stars. Write a review. It helps us with the algorithm. It helps us climb the charts. And it's due to you and your reviews that we are a top 5 show in entertainment news, often hitting number one. Weekly, we're constantly hitting number one. So thank you, but please take a minute and give us a review. It really means the world to me. All right, so for today, some people wear their scars quietly. Others turn them into armor. Vinny Cuevas did something different. He turned his into a story. Vinny grew up Cuban and Puerto Rican in the South Bronx, where survival wasn't symbolic, it was daily. Power meant protection, loyalty meant life or death, and the streets didn't just shape who you were, they decided who you would become. In his memoir, From the Bronx with Scars, Vinny doesn't romanticize that world. He shows you the cost of it, the betrayals, the grief, the bullets you survive, the losses you don't. He writes about what happens when toughness becomes a trap and what it takes to step out of a story that feels pre-written. This is also a story about fatherhood, about how becoming a parent changes the way you think about risk, legacy, and love, and about loss so profound it redefines purpose, losing a child and finding a reason to keep going anyway. Vinny has lived multiple lives, the streets, security, acting, screenwriting, but at the core of all of them is the same question. Who are you when you stop surviving and start choosing to live? This episode isn't about glorifying where you come from. It's about understanding it and deciding what parts of it you carry forward and what you finally put down. This is Vinny Cuevas, and this is From the Bronx with Scars. Welcome to Misunderstood. Vinny, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. Pleasure to be on this show.
Of course. It's such a pleasure to have you on. I love that you sent me the book. I actually read it. You sent me two copies. I gave another copy to a friend of mine that I thought would love it. And she loved it. First of all, From the Bronx with Scars is a really interesting title. So the first thing I wanted to ask you is like, how hard was it to come up with your title and what does it mean to you?
It was hard. I mean, I can say From the Bronx with Love, it's just not organic through what I went through. Mm-hmm. I felt scars because obviously I was raised in the Bronx, and throughout that childhood to adulthood, it was all pretty much battle scars. There was nothing fun about what I did, how I grew up. So there was nothing amorous about that life or lifestyle. And it was in the beginning, I was like, oh, how do we work? But then it just came to me. I said, this is gonna work.
Yeah.
The irony of Bronx with Love, the Bronx with Scar.
I love it because once I read it, I knew what it meant. And I could see your scars, you know, but they were like battle wounds that you know, you wouldn't be who you were without them, is kind of my takeaway.
Absolutely
from it.
Correct.
So I want to start from the beginning. So people that don't know you and haven't read the book yet, so that they get to know you. Can you talk about your life growing up in the Bronx a little bit?
Well, I was born in Arthur. I was born in Fordham Hospital, but raised in Arthur Avenue. I grew up in a pretty much lower middle class family, borderline poor. My father was the only one working, and my mother was a stay-at-home mom. But my dad had his habits, his drinking habits. You know, he was the one covering all the bills, so it was always hard. There was times where we were barely making it ends meet. So it became frustrating. And there was also, you know, as a child, I absorbed domestic violence through my parents, and it's what I grew up seeing. And it was a tumultuous time being that I can remember things when I was 5 years old that I shouldn't be remembering. Yeah. You know, you should remember joy, and I remember beatings and arguing. Me being angry all the time at that age, which wasn't normal. You know, protecting my sister, who was 4 years younger than me, Liz. And so, you know, I even through school and just my whole childhood, I cannot remember a time where I was happy at all. And that's basically how my childhood started. It was nothing. It was just pain, 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 pain. And as a child, I mean, you grew up normalizing that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you didn't see anything else. And every child you saw that had a decent household, you were envious of.
Right.
And you wondered. So,
yeah. So you open up the book talking about how your parents are arguing, you're protecting your sister, and how, you know, they're almost like lullabies, these arguments, they put you to sleep. They're the things that you hear every day. And so it's an obvious transition that you would look outside of your home for some sense of family and to be needed, even though eventually your mom, you know, really does need you with help with your sister. But it seems like the obvious transition is for you to find that loyalty in working for people in your neighborhood and become somewhat of what we would say is a gangster. Can you talk a little bit about what that was like and when you started sort of running envelopes for people and, you know, doing that, and explain to people that are not familiar with that world what goes on?
Well, the transition started, ironically enough, with the movie Bronx Tale. Mm-hmm. When I saw the movie Bronx Tale, I was like, wait a minute, this ain't fiction. I see this in my neighborhood. And even though I saw these well-dressed men who really never had 9-to-5 jobs, but we admired the neighborhood kids admired them because they would give us money. They made sure the neighborhoods were safe from hooligans. And I was like, wow, that's cool. But then when we saw the movie, we realized that's what it was. So So my cousin was already involved. My cousin was notorious, but he was involved. He kind of introduced me. I started off delivering pizza. Mm-hmm. But in those pizzas, there was betting slips, which betting is illegal in New York.
Oh.
And so it was like bookies. So we started doing that. I was doing good. I was pretty tough. You know, there were times when they tried to intimidate me, try to rob me. I didn't let it happen. I would get into fights. They'll steal my pizza somewhat. So they kind of liking me. My cousin kept vouching for me, and my cousin kept vouching for me. And little did you know, we were the only two Hispanics, by the way, because there was a lot of racial tension in those times.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like, you know, you had the Puerto Ricans, the Blacks, the Italians, and everybody was against one another. But we were, I don't know, because I may similarize a little bit of the Italian culture. They accepted us. And at the time, we thought it was cool. You know, like two Hispanics, right. We didn't realize it's kind of messed up, you know, but they said, cool. So I started doing that. And I was like 12 years old, maybe 12, 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then, sadly enough, I got a liking and I was making money that my dad wasn't even making.
Right. Right.
And of course, my parents didn't know.
Of course. So yeah. Can you talk about what you learned about power growing up? Because I feel like that's a theme throughout your life, that it's something that you really wanted to be powerful. You wanted to walk in a room and have people either fear you or admire you. But then eventually, as you have your children, you realize that it's at a cost because you never feel secure with that.
That's correct. I mean, you learn that right away. But first of all, respect is earned in this business and that lifestyle. And in my teens, you know, I got to the point where we were doing higher level debt collection, which unfortunately for me was corporal punishment. What was needed to be done to collect debts. And I didn't enjoy that. My cousin did. And I realized the fear I put in people, because I was a boxer too. And the fear I put in people, I can never be beat. And you get that adrenaline. And in hindsight, it's a horrible thing to have. There's a part of my brain, and I still have it, that just doesn't show fear. I don't know what it is. It's good and bad. And at the time, it was good. I wasn't afraid of anything. I wasn't afraid of dying. So I would go into these situations. And then I realized, and these people give me so much love, and we want him to do this. We want him to do that. You know, I met people from the Genovese family, which hugged me. They embraced me. And I felt like I could have been a made man, not knowing that you have to be fully Italian to do so, which in hindsight, that's a good thing.
Right.
And that didn't happen.
Yeah. So there's a famous quote in The Bronx Tale. And by the way, I had Lilo Brancato on my show after a couple of years ago when he got out of jail. He's still a friend of mine. I really like him. But the quote, and forgive me if my words are not exact, but the quote that he had in the movie, which really stood out to him, and I talked to him about it, was, is it more important to be respected and loved or feared in that environment?
At that time, I said feared, because I didn't know what love was.
Mm.
I didn't feel it at all. And when I did have a girlfriend, I mean, she left too soon, and I was just spiteful. So to me, it was just, I needed to put fear in people, be respected. And I was pretty notorious at it. And right now I'm like a little nervous talking about it, because it's just not who I am now. And I couldn't believe that I was this human being. And it took a lot for me to get out of that mindset. It's not easy. It's almost like being a drug addict. You know, that rush, that adrenaline, to let go of that and become a normal human being.
Right.
It was hard. It was a hard transition.
Right. And from what I read, it was interesting, because it does seem like it was hard to get out of it. But at the same time, well, hard because you were getting money that you would have to now maybe go back to a 9-to-5 job, or, you know, there was all sorts of things that there was going to be instability in figuring out how you would make that kind of money and like an honest living. And also, you know, to be respected like that and then go and work somewhere where somebody acts like you're an assistant. I mean, I've even been in situations like that, different level, different scale, but I know that. I went from running my own business, closing it during COVID, and then going to work for someone. And I remember being like, I used to run two stores and like, no, and like someone's talking to me like I'm 25 and I don't know what I'm doing. And it was so offensive. And even though they had no idea why I would be offended, it was within me that I was like, I can't do this. And I literally left, walked out of the job. I'm like, I'm not doing this. Yeah. So you understand that, right? Like of how hard it
Absolutely.
Is. So what was it that finally, I mean, I know from reading your book, but can you tell our listeners how you finally got out of that lifestyle and why?
And it all happened not by accident, by the grace of God, I would say. Everybody was just getting busted. And I was questioned a lot by the feds, by the police, you know, to give people up. They offered me time. And I just never buckled because I knew when I got into that life, what was expected. And I was willing to take that. I was willing to take time. I was willing to die if I had to. They didn't believe it because everybody says that. But they saw with my behavior, even my cousin who got addicted to drugs and just betrayed the same people who brought him up. I still kept in a straight and narrow. But everybody was going to jail. So it's almost like I was left with no one.
Right.
Which it was my opportunity out. I would say that was the tunnel God gave me, because had I stayed there, had these people not been, that was when Rudy Giuliani took over, he was just taking everybody down.
Right.
The fact that I just never gave anybody up and they really had nothing on me, they'll try to put fear in you, of course, but I knew they had nothing on me. And if I needed to do time, I would just do it, because I can't live with that. You know, I picked a lifestyle. Then I got to take the consequences.
Right.
And it's all by accident that I left that business, to be honest.
You brought up Rudy's name, another person I've had on the show. I'm curious, as someone who feared him so much because you saw what he was doing to New York at the time, what are your thoughts on who he is now today?
If I saw him, I would say you saved my life. Literally. I would
talk about that.
Because it was in a really bad path. The power was becoming abundant. Like I was just there. I wasn't a made guy, but I had made guys protected, which is scary as shit. Because he was just locking anybody up. We hated him. We didn't like him for obvious reasons. But in retrospect, you're like, Mr. Giuliani, Mr. Mayor, you saved my life. You know, because and I mean for him. Who knows? I probably wouldn't be having this conversation with you.
Right, right. And what do you think of this, what's going on in New York right now and the safety there or lack of it? Like, how do you feel about people that are growing up in the Bronx and in Manhattan, by the way, versus back then when you were doing it?
I'll tell you one thing. If I grew up today in the Bronx, I'll be dead tomorrow. That's how bad it is.
Wow. When so you I think was it's gotten that much worse?
Oh, it's horrible. The thing is, when I was growing up, we didn't have accessibility to arms. Wasn't that easy. Now anybody has a gun. Anybody shoots anybody. Anybody said, you can't even argue. There was time we squared it off. We fought.
Right.
That was that. You know, best man won, shook hands, it was over with.
But now it's
a cowboy land.
What if I told you that the idea that you only get parasites when you travel to some exotic country is flat wrong? Millions of Americans carry parasites right now, often without symptoms. For example, it's estimated that millions in the United States have been exposed to Toxocara, a parasitic worm, yet most never even know it. Parasites do not need a plane ticket. They can enter through tap water, sushi, undercooked foods, or contaminated produce. Some strains live in all stages, eggs, larvae, adults, hidden in your gut, releasing toxins that sabotage your energy and digestion. That's why I'm excited about Parify, Kim Rogers' 30-day full-spectrum parasite cleanse. The kit works by clearing parasites, worms, candida, and heavy metals, targeting parasites in all life stages, supporting gut health, detox pathways, and toxin removal. It's taken orally, daily, for 30 days. With precise dosing. I'm actually doing it myself right now. I started with the lymph cleanse, then I'm doing the Parify. Want to dive deep? I did a full interview with Kim Rogers, the worm queen herself, where we expose all the myths, understand the facts, and show how to protect your body. Listen to that episode if you haven't already. Meanwhile, go to rogershood.com and use the code Rachel to get 10% off of your order. That's R-A-C-H-E-L for 10% off. Give it a try. Maybe your body's missing link is hiding inside. Let's do this together. Again, it's rogershood.com, rogershood.com, and use the code Rachel for 10% off.
Yeah, but what is it about this mentality that people in that lifestyle or that are involved in stuff like that, like don't care about going to jail? Like that would deter me from spitting on the ground if it was illegal. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to spend the rest of my life there.
It's not that I didn't care. It's that I knew those were the possibilities. So you train your brain.
Yeah.
It was either that or death. And I've been close to death several times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why I'm here, but I've been close to death several times, more so than being arrested, because I don't have a criminal record. Obviously, I'm just, you know, I knew how to do things and I said the right things. I just never had enough on me, and I was never going to give up my friends. And that may be a cliche. I was just never going to do that. So my brain was already set on that.
And you just said you were close to death. In what way? Like, you were getting, like, there was times you could have gotten in trouble?
I was shot at. I was called into a room because I recommended a guy who had a $10,000 dome, and he disappeared. So it was my recommendation. I had to find him or I was gone. They took me in the back room. They beat me down. And obviously I found him. I found him. His sister got to me. And, you know, Where is he today? He's okay today.
Okay.
But I made sure he never did that again, because the respect and love they have for me was the reason that he killed me.
Got it.
Because once you vouch for somebody, it doesn't matter. If that person screws up, you're responsible.
Right. I totally get that.
And I've been shot at. I've been shot. So.
Right. That was also in the book, which was kind of comical the way you wrote about it. How it was hard on your sex life to have been grazed by a bullet in your ass.
Oh, yeah. Originally, you know, there were certain things I couldn't do movement-wise. It gets better after a while. But it was a grace, but still, it was painful.
Right.
You know, to this day, I don't know if it was meant for me. You know, I really don't. And nobody ever spoke about it. I don't know if the same people that I love and respected so much actually had something to do with it. I didn't ask any questions. I knew I had to just be careful. I knew that those were warning signs.
But also, that was sort of a turning point that I read about in the book. And tell me if I'm wrong, but it seemed like no one came to your defense to be like, we're going to figure out who did this. And so at that point, you were like, I don't really have the kind of loyalty that I think, so I need to get out. Is that kind of how that was written?
And it was disappointing, because I don't know if they had something to do with it.
Right.
And if they didn't, they just did nothing about it.
Right.
So at this point, I'm putting my life on the line for them, and I'm not getting that in return. So I had to make a decision. But you just can't walk out of that life willfully.
Right.
You know, because you know a lot.
That's right.
Their mentality as well. You know, if he gets pinched, he's going to speak. He's going to talk. So we might eliminate this threat. And it could have gotten to that. But like I said, Mr. Giuliani just cleaned house. So it just, who knows where it was going. I mean, they don't leave loose ends. I can guarantee you that. They don't leave loose ends.
Right.
Not the most loyal business either.
Totally. So, all right. You talk about in your book how you do finally get out of there. You get a job at Radio City. You meet a lot of people and you realize it's about relationships, which, you know, it takes people a long time, me included, to learn that life really is about relationships, and that's how you move forward in life. But you clearly talk about that. Also, in the meantime in here, you have children. You have a son and you have a daughter. The son was older than the daughter. And how old were your kids when you were like working at, were they alive yet when you were at Radio City?
Yeah, my daughter was about 12. My son was in his 20s.
Oh, okay. So
yeah,
you
I had, was an adult okay. already. Yeah, I was an adult already. So
got it. Okay, so they were born earlier. And you are very open about it, that it seems like your parents really helped raise Vince, right?
My father, and which is why he redeemed himself so much, and I hold no grudge against him, which I have all the rights to, because what he didn't do with me, being that he was now a sober man, he did with my son.
Right.
And I can't repay him for that. So I said, listen, let bygones be bygones. You know, maybe it was meant for this to happen so I could become the person I am today.
Right, you know? Right. And you talk a lot about seeing differences in your children. Your son was more like you. Your daughter was very tender and, you know, very feminine, so to speak. Tell a little bit about your kids.
Yeah, absolute opposite. Like, my son sadly wanted to be me so bad.
Mm-hmm.
He boxed. He has so much more talent than I did. The kid could sing. He can act without even trying, because he wasn't disciplined. He was just that naturally talented. He was a great boxer. And I always try to guide him. I said, listen, it's almost like he grew up enough to know what I did. And it's people that speak, that talk, which I preferred them not to. But also, they didn't want to keep him in a bubble. I had to tell him, what I don't want you to do in life. I don't want you to be me. Mm-hmm. You know, I want you to be the opposite of me. I want you to go to school, get an education, which I didn't have much of, and become, you have so much talent. You pick whichever one you want to do. He went the boxing route. It was going well into his neck surgery, which we can get into, which led to his succumb to his, you know, to him not being with us anymore. But, and my daughter's just a sweetheart. You know, she's a bookworm. Like, she'll read 6 books a month, and it's the most amazing thing. Well raised, you know, her mother raised her well. I was always around too. So my son was still raised in somewhat of a tumultuous environment.
Yeah.
Until he got older. And it's just what he knew. And he wanted to be me, not he wanted to be.
Right. So if it's okay, and I know it's a tough subject, but if we could talk about Vince for a minute, just because I think it's so helpful for people that are listening that may have lost a child. My father died actually when he was 44 of a cocaine overdose. And I was 15. So it's the opposite. I lost a parent, but my grandmother, his mother, never got out of bed after that. She could not function in life. She was a beautiful, remarkable woman who rarely left the house. You know, basically could not function after that. And she lived for 40 more years or whatever, you know, she lived forever, and her life was never to be the same. And the problem for her was that she never found purpose. And even though my brother and I were still alive, we lived in totally different parts of the United States. And she was so devastated by what happened. She could not find her footing. And it really changed her as a person. It changed her marriage. It changed everything. So for you, you know, I want to hear how you learned, and to say moving on is not the right word, but how you got through it. And for people that have lost a child, how you work through grief, because it can, that grief, which I've also been through, can choke almost who you are, and it can make you feel stuck. And, you know, it is, and I'm very sorry, by the way, for your loss. It's an incredible, undescribable loss that obviously only you know how that feels to you. And I'm so sorry for you, but I want people to be able to learn from your experience.
Oh, absolutely. Like you said, you don't get over that. You move forward, or you move around the pain. You have the purpose is my daughter. Mm-hmm. That my daughter and I've been around. I was crippled for a year. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to go. I would leave my house and forget where I was going. I would fly everywhere. Even in my current job, there were times I'll see someone who looks like him. And I'll go into the bathroom and start crying. Blood pressure would go up. I mean, none of my colleagues knew it, because they don't need to worry about me like that.
Right.
And it's a pain that'll always be there. That doesn't go away. You got to learn to manage it. And it's sporadic. The pain is sporadic. It'll come and go. And see, what I learned to do is celebrate his life and not mourn. Because I was just more, I was going to the cemetery 4 times a week. It was just destroying me. Right. So I said, you know, I'm just not going to bring him back. So I should just celebrate who he was. It was 33 years that I had him, his talents, and just celebrate it. And this is what I do now. And it's just how you train your brain. It's just how you train. I go once a week and we have a good time, me and him, you know, and that's, but the pain is forever. And it's not even, it's hard to describe it. And I don't even ever want you to even understand that, you know, because the pain is forever. And I totally get your grandma. It's just, it's brutal.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I'm so sorry. But it is great that you are able to figure out some other purpose. Like, you have really found your footing in what you love to do. Now you're a screenwriter, you're an actor, you work in the security industry, doing things, and where it's very evident you've found a family in the people that you work with. So it's funny, in reading your book, throughout the arc of what you write about, is this loyalty and this power, and how even though it's different from your childhood, it seems like you have found it in where you are now. And it's something that you can continue to build and grow, depending on how much you write or what kind of acting you do or what kind of gigs you're getting. But it sounds like you are finding your way, if not have found it to be really good right now.
Very true. It's a work in progress till the day I die, I guess. The transition is there. Like, I mean, I was loyal to people that weren't good people, but they were good to me. But now I'm good. I'm loyal to good people that are good people. My colleagues, or I love them to death. They saved me from so much. My boss, they don't realize because I never speak about it. But when I met this group of beautiful human beings, I was in a dark spot. I was in a dark place. Being able to stay busy is very important. You know, and the amount of love they treat me is the amount of love I get back, you know, and that's something you can't replace. And it's something I would never want to go back to that lifestyle that I once lived. It was so perilous. And This is what I want now. Yeah, you don't make the money. You make the money's nothing. Not the money don't mean anything. I'm not taking any of that. Love life, I'm still trying to figure that out.
I was going to talk to you about your love life because you write about a couple. You talk about a couple different women in there. It seems like someone who was somewhat of a love of your life died very quickly of ovarian cancer. What was that like?
I was in the moment of my life, I was just ruthless. I met this young lady in a party, adorable human being. And right away you get the butterflies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this could be the one, you know, and I still didn't tell her what I did. I told her I was in a moving company, I remember. And I would get people jobs and stuff like that. And we fell in love. I was very young. I was in my 20s. And it was just like, I always wanted to see her. And then one day she wasn't feeling well, went to the doctor. She had all these tests done. Finds out she had ovarian cancer. Stage 4. And I had enough money to pay for her medical treatments that sometimes insurances give you a hard time with.
Yeah.
But to no avail, like she succumbed to the disease in like 4 months and it just destroyed me.
Wow.
And I was like, I try to do it because that was going to be my way out. And I said, I try to do the right thing and it's just not meant for me. So I was just revolting against everything that stood in my path. I didn't want to know about love. I didn't know about women. I just wanted to do what I had to do and inflicting pain. Sadly to say, was my therapy. And it's sad to say that. But that was an unfortunate situation. It was a big loss in my life. And I still think about it.
So do you think that it's on your bucket list to have a long-term relationship or get married? Do you even want to do that?
I would love that. It's amazing. So I'm 53 years old, Rachel.
Are you on dating apps? Like, what are you doing today?
I've never done that.
What? Why?
Ever done dates? I just haven't. I mean, think anybody puts filters and all that. I want to be in love with the person
that's
I see.
True. That's true. But so. By the way, that's how Dan and I met. Did you know that? We met on a dating app.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I had no idea Dan was on a dating app.
But so Dan and I met like 4 years ago on the dating app, had a phone call, but then I lived in New York, he lived in Florida. And like, so we didn't meet for like 2.5 or 3 years, whatever it was. And then finally, after him, you know, writing me all the time. And then I think we followed each other on Instagram for like 3 years. So I kind of saw how his life was going. He saw how mine was. And then we got together and essentially we were friends for a while. And then we were like, why aren't we dating each other? This is weird. Because we found that we really liked each other. So my advice, I mean, who am I? But I would say, because also I'm 50, I've dated a lot of different people and it hasn't worked. And I always am like, this could be it. And I always wanted to get married, you know. I've been married a couple times, but so I've made some mistakes. But So the bottom line is, I think dating apps could be interesting. Next time I see you, we're going to make one for you. And we're going to,
if you help me, I definitely
will totally help you. We'll go through the girls. I'm really good at weeding out who's good and who's totally fake. Cause listen, most girls put a filter. They look like they're 15 pounds thinner and 20 years younger. So we ought to find the right one.
Oh, you got it. You'll be my love agent.
Okay, good. I love that.
I will love that.
So fun. Okay. And then another thing I wrote, I made a note to ask you about. You talk about a party that you went to in there, which was very reminiscent to what we've heard recently about, which was like those freak offs, like the Diddy party. You don't mention who you were invited by. It was a comedian. It doesn't seem like it was Puffy. But can you talk about what that party was like? And is it similar to what we've read about?
Unfortunately, I can't mention. I can tell you in private, but I can't do it on the air. Fine. But yeah, it wasn't to that extent. There was no minors. Everybody was ID checked, I remember. And they had pouches where we put our phones in. I was a manager of security. He invited me. I went. And the first thing I see couples having oral sex. Okay, I've been there before. I've seen this before. But then I see the drug game. I wasn't judging it. What happened was I lived during that type of life. I lived in that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I said, it was almost like luring. It was almost like, you can't take an alcoholic to a bar.
Sure.
So I was like, I had two choices. The further I walked in there, the further I got involved. Or I could have just walked out and said, this is not for me anymore. Because everything was available. I never in my life done drugs. Never touched it, ate it. But very promiscuous at one point in my life. And there were beautiful women there. So it's like the temptation is there. And it wasn't like you had to work for it.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I decided to leave. And the next day I saw him at his last show. And he started laughing. And he understood. He understood where I was coming from. I told the truth.
So there was no peer pressure. It was fine.
No. Actually, he was, when I left, he still hadn't shown up. He, you know, I got there a little early, which I wasn't supposed to. It was kind of conflict of interest. My Radio City had that rule where you couldn't really mingle with the talent, go to after parties. And with the Radio City Rockettes, you can't really fall in love. I broke that rule. But, you know. So, but it was crazy. It's no lying when you hear about these parties. This was insane.
Wow.
You know, everything go. But there were no, I mean, I can't say for sure, but I didn't see any underage. That would have been something else. I didn't see any.
Right, right. Okay, tell us what is happening now in your life and what your bucket list is in the future. Like, are you working on any movies? Do you want to focus more on acting, writing? Like, where are we at?
I think my acting days are over by choice. I'm more of a writer, which is my therapy. I have this series called Blood Air, which I'm shopping now to networks. It's doing well. I also wrote a story for the Pointer Sisters that's in the works. So we'll see if that pans out. I'm not very educated. I'm self-educated. And I've learned a lot on my own through trials and tribulations. And I'm very good at telling stories. You're free to read anyone you want. And I have like 13 screenplays, all of different genres, except rom-com. Wow. I'm not really at that level yet.
You know, well, because you have to live your own rom-com, Vinny.
You do. It's almost like I have to be self-experienced.
Yes, you have to get yourself in
which
there.
Which is where you're going to come in, right? So.
Yep. As long as I make it in the screenplay, too. Yeah. I could be the woman with the crystal ball or whatever. And I get to make it.
You got your own way in there.
Okay. All right. Well, I love it. So I want people to know that they should absolutely get this book, From the Bronx with Scars. Where can people find it?
You can find it on Amazon. It's simple. You have an Amazon account, type it up. It's also in Barnes & Nobles. So if it's not in the store itself, you can have them. I would say just get it through Amazon. It's the easiest bet.
Okay. Very easy.
It should be your home. Very easy. If you happen to walk to Barnes & Nobles, you go in there and get it. But, you know, being that it's self-published, is only 85 pages because it's quite expensive. And the legalities that come with it, like publication companies, they take care of you legal-wise. In case you mention someone, they decide they want to sue you, which happens all the time. So that's why I was very meticulous with the names I put, with the organizations I put, because I didn't want any. I mean, I wouldn't get hammered.
Yeah.
So you can definitely get it there. And I'm thinking about writing a screenplay on it. I don't want it to be similar to Bronx Tale. You know, I want it to be, you know, I have an idea. So I'm working on that idea. But I think a book is a segue into a screenplay because it gets 100%. In the hands of any producer. They may say they want to, you know, they want to put it together. So Well, that's still up in the air, fingers crossed.
Yes, fingers crossed. Okay. We all have our fingers crossed for you. And last two questions. What do you think is the most misunderstood thing about you?
The most misunderstood? A lot of people think I'm... They don't think I'm humble. A lot of people may look at me as arrogant, and I'm the total opposite. Maybe if I like to dress well, you know, throw the medallions on, you know, I like to match my watches with my shirts, and they think I'm, and so they meet me. So I'm always misunderstood that way. People are, oh my God, I thought you were this type of person. And a lot of people don't know, because it's not in a talk. I don't need to advertise this. I help the homeless a lot. I go around, like I did in San Francisco. I saw a bunch of homeless people with dogs. And I would go into Target and get them dog food here, which is, I'm going to spend like $150. It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
Because I've been there. I've been where nobody's going to help. That's a crappy feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the things people don't know about.
It's funny because I think that you do come off as intimidating, maybe, that you look great, you dress well, and people don't realize that you have this whole story behind you. And, you know, I think it's a common misconception or whatever with people in general that, you know, unless you make yourself a little bit vulnerable and talk about what you're going through, people won't know that about you, but that's the only real way to connect with someone. So like you said, you started working with a lot of the people at your company and they didn't know you were having a hard time or going through something. I can pretty much guarantee that everyone is going through something at some point and would never want to bring it up because they would think that no one understands. And that's the most universal thing about us, that at some point we've all felt stuck. We've all felt lost or feeling like a discount version of ourselves or whatever it is. So I think that, you know, just connecting and doing conversations like this, people understand you so much better. My last question for you is, if anyone's listening that is in the situation that you came from, like they worked hard in their younger years doing things that they may have, like, you know, it may have been questioning. It might've been a gangster lifestyle. It might've been something that they don't feel fulfilled in because it's not bringing them into who they really are. How would you sort of, what advice would you give to someone to make that transition of really becoming themselves and finding a purpose in a way that they don't have to fear their stability anymore?
Well, the one thing I would say, anyone involved in the lifestyle that I live nowadays, and I'm going to be blunt with them, you're not going to survive it if you keep on. This is a different era. There's no respect. Law and order is out the window. Cops hands are tied. They're not going to help you out by political reasons. So I would say pick a forte. Everybody has a forte and run with it. Because if you don't, and you don't need people's support, I don't want to hear that nobody supports me. You know, I use that excuse. And if you have something, everybody has something they're good at. Just run with it, make it happen. I don't care how hard you got to sell pencils. If you sell pencils, you do it. Because a lifestyle, it's just, it's not sustainable. Not nowadays, no. Back then, remember, you got technology now, you got surveillance, you got dogs, you got drones. You just can't get away with it.
Right.
So I tell them it's just not worth it.
Right. Yeah. And what you said, I think, makes a lot of sense. If you pick something to do and be really good at it and stand out for what you do.
Everyone has something they're really good at.
Yeah. Just
no one is incapable.
I love it. All right. Well, Vinny, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have met you and thank get you. To speak to you again, everybody. From the Bronx with Scars. You can pick it up at Amazon. Please read it. It's really good. As he mentioned, it's not that long. You can read it, you know, very easily on a train ride, on an airplane. I definitely recommend it. I loved it. And I wish you the best of luck. And I can't wait to see you next time on a Stratoscope.
I'm totally honored. Thank you. It's the first time I've ever spoken about this publicly like this. And I'm glad it was you.
Oh, you're so sweet.
No. So we'll definitely, but You gotta get the love agent going thing.
100%. We're making that happen. So I cannot wait.
I can't wait either. It's okay. A pleasure. Thank you. Say hi to Dan.
I will.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.